You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Today I'll have a full hour show, and there are two stories I want to cover because they are the two stories that are in the news, starting really yesterday evening, going into today. And the first one I'll be covering is the situation with Brian Williams, and the second story will be President Obama's new strategy with dealing with the Islamic State. But first, let's address the Brian Williams situation. I really did not cover this story at all when it was breaking and really left it to develop after a few days. I thought all along that he should have been fired, because what's essential for any newscaster is to have the trust of his audience. And once you're caught in an out-and-out lie, which he was, and even though he apologized for it, he again told another lie. And what's coming out is this is a pattern. It's happened before. Now, something needs to be said, and I'll say it right up front. There are people at NBC that knew of this. Because when a reporter or anchor goes out on assignment like this, he has a crew of people, including someone taking the video, usually someone for the sound, a producer. He doesn't go alone. So there are several people that work for NBC, either as employees or contractors, that knew what Brian Williams was saying simply were not true. And I don't doubt that one or more of them might have said something. Now, the other thing that disturbs me, there are many people today are coming to Brian Williams' defense. And one of the common refrains you hear, he's a very good friend. He's very likable. And that's a problem. Why is it a problem? Some of your best liars are very likable, charming, buddy buddies. You want to go have a drink with them or go out with them. And they count on that. And that's a problem. And I'm sure from everything I'm hearing, I would probably like Brian Williams. But what got him in that position was, through the years, telling similar lies. I don't think this is the first or second lie that has come out. Supposedly, NBC is doing a complete, thorough investigation. Well, I'm waiting to see that investigation. I don't think we'll ever see it made public. But I think NBC has decided, and I think they ultimately will make the right decision here, is to terminate his contract. Because they invested a lot of time and money building this person up. He's the number one leading newscaster or anchor today. Now, what you need to understand, the demographic for people that watch nightly news are older people in their late 50s, 60s, 70s, and older. I'm in that demographic, but I don't watch any nightly newscast, because I go out and seek the news that I'm interested in. In other words, I'm savvy as far as the internet and will look for stories that interest me, as opposed to relying on a nightly newscast where most of the stories they're covering simply bore me to tears. But what's essential if you're going to be a news anchor is credibility. That is, it's your reputation. And once that is tarnished, it's hard, if impossible, to recover. Now, if it was only one instance, he might get his job back. I don't think he's going to get his job back. I said on an earlier show, if they suspended him for 2 weeks or less, he's probably going to come back. But if it goes over 30 days or more, they've concluded he's damaged goods, he's toast, and he's not going to come back. So even though they've suspended him for 6 months without pay, what do you think they're doing right now? They're setting up meetings, first with the investigators of the Brian Williams, to go over his entire history to see if there are any other instances of this. And I think there are. Usually when there's two or three instances, there are others. And that means they're going to have to talk to the people that work with them. Camera people, audio people, producers. Now, generally, what I've heard, and it's strictly hearsay, he's a likable guy, and they want him to stay, and he's a friend. What you need to understand is this gentleman is well paid. The number I hear, he has a $14 million contract. So when it's suspended, he's going to take a hit. And my take is he probably had, he's 55 years old. He had at least another 10 years, if not longer, in that chair had he not run into this situation. And I've reviewed it, and I think it's open and shut. I would have fired him on the spot. I may be cold-hearted, but just a minute. They have a lot. NBC and the owners and the shareholders have a lot invested in this gentleman. And he did it to himself. No one forced him to do this. And it's sad, it's tragic, but you need to learn from your mistakes, and as well as the mistakes of others. This is not the first time this has happened in this industry. And when you're in news, where your word is critical, your credibility, once is too many. Now, let me make clear, everyone makes mistakes. I make mistakes, and I try to correct them. But there's a big difference between making a mistake and out and out lying about it. I listen to talk radio, and one Vietnam veteran called up and said, I used to fly helicopters in Vietnam. And one of my helicopters that I was in was shot down. I remember that to this day. And that was many years ago, over 40 years ago. And this veteran said, I also saw helicopters explode. I remember that. And that's the key point. If you were in a crash of a helicopter, you remember that. You don't say you were in a helicopter that was hit. He was making it up, folks. He was making it up to enhance his reputation. And what he was doing is stealing the valor of the people that were in the helicopter that actually got shot down. So I'm glad he's suspended. And I'm waiting for NBC to announce his termination. Now, many are saying, well, he'll be brought back in a lesser role, maybe as a reporter or on another show. I doubt it. I seriously doubt it. I think that would be compounding the mistake. As far as I'm concerned, he's damaged goods. Seriously damaged goods. He brought this on himself. He has no one to blame but himself. And yes, he probably is likable, but that was used to convince you that he was telling you the true story when he wasn't. And that's what you find with many liars. They are good old boys, likable, friendly, have the common touch. You see, I've worked with people that I knew were liars. I wasn't in a position to do anything about it. But in the office, it was known they are liars. And the problem is, I was in the sales area, and I've been in manager jobs as well. It is very risky. As a matter of fact, I consider it a mistake to knowingly hire someone that has this problem, but even worse, to keep them, because they will not only get themselves in trouble, they'll get you in trouble, and they'll get the company in trouble, and the people that invest in this company. That's why he needs to be fired. He didn't seem to think about that. It was all about Brian Williams going up the chain and ultimately not only being the lead news anchor, but managing editor, which is a very responsible job. The last one, I believe, well, not at NBC, but very few news anchors also have that. So I'm glad that NBC did the right thing, at least suspending him. And I think it's just a matter of time before his contract is terminated, because he's breaching his contract, because this reflects negatively on the company. It's a matter of integrity, and he violated the trust, not only the trust between him as an employer, but him and his audience and the owners of the company, NBC. Now, people have argued that he could come back. because his demographic is this older audience, they can be somewhat forgiving, but there always will be doubt. Always will be doubt. The other thing I'll say, he's not a very good liar and made a poor choice. He got away with it. That's what really surprised me. He got away with this for a long period of time. This incident happened over 12 years ago. This is a lesson for everybody. And what you're seeing is when you get the label liar, and that's what he's getting, you're going to see cartoons. And there are a number of cartoons already addressing it. It's not pretty, folks. You know, Ross Perot, he used to own EDS. And he made a statement, if he ever caught an employee cheating on his wife, he'd fire him on the spot. And if he knew that an employee was, or a future employee, in other words, someone who was interviewing for a job, was cheating on his wife, he'd never hire him. And his point was this, if he'll cheat on his wife, what would he do in terms of the company's resources? The heart of the matter is trust. And that is truly the issue here, trust. Would you trust anything that Brian Williams says? I wouldn't. I wouldn't watch his show. And it is sad that he loses his job, big paycheck. But put in perspective, folks, there are very, very, very few people in the news business that make anywhere near what he does. And the point is, there's a lot of competition for this job, and there are a lot of people that can do his job. There is no indispensable person, and he's going to sadly find that out. And maybe NBC will get lucky and find someone with integrity that can do the job better than Brian Williams, but do it in a manner where the audience of Nightly News can trust them. It's going to be a building process, but I will not be surprised over the next 6 months, at least one or more people will emerge as replacements, candidates for replacing Brian Williams. So for the folks that were loyal viewers of Brian Williams, I don't think he's coming back. Get used to somebody else. I don't know who it is and don't have much interest, but it's a lesson for everyone to take to heart. And he got away with it for years. So I'm not crying any crocodile tears because he was making big money over those years. So I'm assuming he did a little retirement planning. I don't think he's going to be hurting, but I'm sure this was a shock because I think he was planning for working for another 10 years. And now he's finding out that he's on the street. Maybe he can find redemption someplace. And people do give people second chances. I'm not against that. But he blew his career on something that he didn't need to do by embellishing what really went on. And it was foolish because there are just too many people, not only in the military and NBC, that knew he was not telling the truth. People were there. The pilots and the people that were there on this mission knew that the plane wasn't hit by a rocket-propelled grenade and had a crash land. And that's what's come out. He was following a helicopter about a half hour later or more that did crash and was hit by an RPG. And then you have the matter of Katrina, where he was staying at the Four Seasons Hotel. I like the Four Seasons Hotels. They're very nice hotels. That was on the border of the French Quarter. The reason why the French Quarter is very expensive is its high elevation. So when you have flooding, the French Quarter almost invariably does not become flooded. And he said he saw a body floating in the street. Just another lie. So he's going to pay the price. And he's already all over the news. The New York Post ran a cover with a rather graphic Brian Williams with a long Pinocchio-type nose. So everyone knows he's a liar. And he's going to bear that stigma for the rest of his life. Whether he'll go on to another career, I wish him well, but I don't think he's coming back. And I do salute NBC for making this tough decision. But I have a question for them. There clearly was other staff and executives that knew of this situation and did not address it at the time for whatever reason. There's some more blame to go around. And yes, he was likable, But when you're betting the companies or this show's ratings on someone that has this problem, and it is a problem, he likes to tell stories. I like to tell stories. That's what this broadcast is about. But when you're commenting on the news, you got to get it right, or as best you can. And what you don't do is inject yourself in the story by lying as to what happened. And that's what he did. Everybody lies. And that was the purpose of the last show. The difference is, some are what people would call white lies. They don't have any consequence, or very little consequence. This was a consequential lie. And the person that's going to pay for it is the one that engaged in this. But who gets hurt? First, the people in NBC that put their trust in him, then his audience, and yes, even the people of the United States. Because as both anchor and managing editor, he picked the stories to cover. And that's my big problem, gripe, with all the networks, particularly NBC, CBS, and ABC. Because for long periods of time, and the phrase is they were in the tank for Obama, they simply would not run highly critical stories of the president when he was first running for president. They weren't doing their jobs. They weren't investigating. They didn't want to run it. They wanted him to win. And that is the problem. And they want him to look good. And how do you do that? If you're in an anchor position or managing editor, you don't run stories that are critical of the president. Not hard to understand. And that pleases the people that you work with, and that pleases the executives. Because there is liberal bias or progressive bias in newsrooms. And news is television, as opposed to talk radio, is very much a team effort. This is highly scripted to literally to the second. The stories are gone over and over and over. Yes, you have some breaking news where you don't have that opportunity. But you decide what you're going to run. You have a limited amount of time. And one way they're biased is simply the selections of which stories they run with. If you don't want to give Benghazi much attention, you ignore it. NBC was guilty of that because they wanted Obama to be reelected. So were other people. So I wish Brian Williams well, and I hope they find a better replacement, someone that doesn't have this type of issue, because integrity is key for success really in any endeavor, because the lies will catch up with you. And you'll be known to have a reputation. Some will be a little bit diplomatic and say, well, he lacks integrity, or he lacks character. They don't want to say out loud he's a liar. But when I hear that, alarm bells go off. I'm dealing with a person I simply cannot trust. And when it's in the communications realm, that's serious. It's one thing to lie to your friends and the people you work with. But when you're broadcasting to the nation, it's a completely other level. Yes, people lie, and it's wrong. Unfortunately, there are many people that will lie to get ahead. Many of them are politicians. Many of them are in media. The competition is cutthroat, and people will take shortcuts, and that's exactly what Brian Williams did. This is a shortcut. So he's paying the price. He still has done very well for himself. But what I'm hoping is they come up with a better person, both with integrity, but also more talent. And they're there because there are a lot of people that want that anchor seat. There are a lot of people that want that managing editor responsibility. So there's no shortage of talent. With that, I wish Brian Williams well and hope not to cover this again. Now I want to turn to what I think is a more serious situation, and that has to do with the president's announcement today of a new strategy in dealing with the Islamic State. One thing before I get into that, I was listening to a talk show last night. Again, I'm not going to identify the show, but it's one that I regularly listen to. And I got very disturbed because this talk show host, on more than one occasion, has identified himself as a libertarian, someone that supports limited government, smaller government. It was obvious that this person was really taken aback by the death of the hostage the person they kidnapped, the woman they kidnapped, the Islamic State kidnapped, and supposedly, according to the Islamic State, were killed by a Jordanian pilot. And in essence, what this person was leading up to, and I've heard this from people calling in on not only his show, but other shows, we need to go over there and bomb them. We need to destroy them. And that is a popular sentiment. But what I seldom, if ever, call a talk show. At one time I used to do. I almost was tempted to call this individual because he wasn't getting many calls. And he eventually moved on to another subject. But he was incensed, and he has been incensed, both at the president as well as the Islamic State. Now, I would have pointed out a couple of things. I wish the Islamic State would be destroyed. Let's not have any misunderstanding here. They're not good people. They're evil as far as I'm concerned. But what we're talking about here is what the United States should do. What the United States should do, if anything. And I would have reminded him it was the United States intervening in Iraq when George Bush was president that led to the overthrow of Saddam Hussein. And that was terrific. And the people of Iraq, at least initially, saw as liberators. There was a problem. The United States was invading on the cheap with not enough forces and really wanted to get in, topple the regime, and get out. They wanted a short, quick war. And they really did little or no planning as to how to win the peace. And what happened? Within 3 years, we became occupiers. And both Iraqi Shia and Iraqi Sunni, who hate each other's guts, by the way, were attacking U.S. military forces in Iraq and killing a lot of our soldiers, men and women, and wounding a lot of them. A lot by bombs, really mines in the street that when vehicles ran over them, they blew up. So over 4,000 Americans died. Thousands were wounded, seriously. Many of them are still in veterans' hospitals. And we should learn from our mistakes. Whenever another country invades, and that's what this was an invasion, another country, unless you're prepared to stay there a very long time, and by long time I mean decades, with tens of thousands of troops, and secure the safety of the civilian population there, unless you're willing to do that, it quickly devolves into the situation that we got. Now, what happened? George W. Bush knew that his strategy was not working in Iraq. So we had a surge. We sent in more troops, changed the generals in charge, and at least for a period of several years, turned it around where we had Al-Qaeda Iraq on the run, really virtually destroyed. Some we had in prison, and some fled to Syria. Part of our success, not talked about a lot, is we put a lot of Iraqis, both Shia and Sunni, on the payroll, either as police officers or as soldiers in the Iraqi army. And the U.S. taxpayers paid for it. That's one of the reasons the surge was a success. And I'm not trying to minimize at all the efforts of our military, our soldiers there. Because the insurgents that we were in fighting, they didn't give up willingly. We had to go in there, building by building, room by room, and either kill them or capture them. And it was a bloody, violent affair. The surge was ultimately successful because what we did was capture, I need to get a better word for that, the Iraqi people began to trust us. We began to have credibility that we would protect them from the insurgents. Now, once that happens, you have intelligence, slowly but surely get intelligence as to where the bad guys are. And that was largely, but not completely, Al-Qaeda Iraq, now relabeled the Islamic State. That's why the surge was successful. The President of the United States, Barack Obama, once he was elected and during his campaigning, made it clear that one of the first things he was going to do was pull out of Iraq. He wanted to refocus on Afghanistan. Ultimately, that's what he did. He did pull out the military, even though our own military leadership was recommending that he maintain a significant force in Iraq. depending on who you were talking to, we were talking somewhere in the range of 10 to 15,000 on the low side and upwards of 50,000 on the high side, and in between around 35,000. That's a significant military presence in any country. And I think had we done that, had the president followed the advice of his experienced military commanders, I'm not saying the situation would be a lot better, but we would have maintained, first of all, our credibility and the trust of the people that put trust in us to keep the two factions apart. Who am I talking about? The Iraqis, in terms of population, the largest percent are Shia. They're Arabs, but they're Shia, and that's a sect of Islam. The minority are Sunnis. Now, the Shia live in southern Iraq and central Iraq, while the Sunnis primarily live in western Iraq and northern Iraq. They have been fighting each other and killing each other for decades. It is a religious sectarian war that's going on and has been going on. So once the U.S. pulled out, both sides were seeking revenge. And what happened is Al-Qaeda Iraq, now renamed the Islamic State, has returned to Iraq and captured many towns and cities. And they are killing, guess what, Shia. There are insurgents that are killing government personnel, whether it's the police or the army, and they are mostly Shia. That's who they're going after. And they're engaging in ethnic cleansing. So we have a religious war between Sunnis and Shia. There's no good side here. Why? Who is Iran is largely Shia, and they are supporting the Shia in Iraq. Now, the Iranians are Persians. They're not Arabs, and that's another important point. But they are providing military support, training, as well as troops to the Iraqi regime or government in Iraq. And without that support, I think the Islamic State, over a period of years, could reinstate their authority over the entire nation. That would be a bloody civil war because people would be literally fighting for their lives. Some would be fleeing the country, but many, many would stay and be killed. And what's happening today, despite the president's statements, is the Islamic State is not being destroyed. It's actually expanding its territory that it occupies, both in Syria and Iraq. Now, here's the problem. I'm of the position that the United States should not intervene in Iraq. And what I mean by that, we keep making the same mistake over and over and over again. Because when you interject yourself, you become an occupier. You become the enemy of the people that you're supposedly helping. It invariably happens. Neither side in Iraq likes the United States or its troops. There are always going to be exceptions, but that's the general situation. That doesn't mean they won't take our money. That doesn't mean they won't take our weapons. And that does not mean they won't take training. They will. They'll have their hands out. Pay me money, I'll be on your side. Give me weapons, I'll go after whoever you want me to. And give me the training so I can use them. That's never a problem. Throughout history, that has never been a problem. If you're willing to pay people to do your fighting, they will come. And that's what has happened, and that's what the United States was engaged in during the surge. I've said in a previous show, well, what should we do about the Islamic State? The last thing is to put U.S. soldiers in any numbers in there. What needs to happen is the Sunni nations, the countries where the majority are Arabs, of the Sunni, which is the majority of the Islamic faith, and that includes Turkey, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, Oman, all are Sunni. All have, to varying degrees, military forces, both troops and weapons and aircraft. Those nations need to form an alliance to take out the Islamic State. Will they? I think at best it's a 50-50 proposition. Those are the people that need to stop this. Why do I say that? The Islamic State wants to overthrow what they consider corrupt regimes. That includes Saudi Arabia, that includes Jordan, that includes Bahrain, that includes Turkey, that includes Egypt. They want to establish a worldwide caliphate where the law of the land is the religious law of Sharia. That is their goal. And they're getting people, recruiting people, not only within Iraq and Syria, but throughout the world. They're engaged in a Islamic jihad, a holy war, a struggle, a violent struggle to rid their countries, and initially Syria and Iraq, of non-believers, whether it's the Iraqi Shia, whether it's Christians, Jews, or other religious minorities. And they're engaged in ethnic cleansing, where they warn you to leave your house, your community, and flee. Otherwise, we'll probably kill you. We're definitely going to take your property, and most likely they're going to kill you. And people are fleeing for their lives. They're taking the threat seriously. These people are religiously motivated, but they're bloodthirsty. You see, these are fundamentalists. They're zealots, they're fanatics, but they're fundamentalists. They have the religion on their side, despite Obama continually denying that. And their verses, not only in the Quran, but also the Haditha, that they cite. You need to clearly understand your enemy and what motivates him, what attracts people to the black flag of the Islamic State. You need to be crystal clear and concise as to what their goals are and what motivates people to do this. Not try to ignore it or deny it or characterize it as not being Islamic. It is fundamentally Islamic. And yes, they're a minority. I understand that. But the first step of defeating anybody in war is to be very, very clear as to who is your enemy. What do they believe in? Where do they get the troops from? Initially, the Islamic State, or what's now called the Islamic State, were a group of about 5,000 people. Not many people, largely in Syria. And they launched an attack into Iraq. Part of what they were doing is try to get more recruits, and they're training them, and to capture territory, which they've done, and also money, stealing from banks, stealing oil, stealing the property of the people that they're trying to push out of where they're living. The primary victims are both Shia Muslims, Iraqis, as well as Sunnis. Anyone that dissents or opposes their rule, they will torture, kill, imprison. It's a single party, both religious and political, and nothing is off the table. They will pursue this, really, as long as it takes, with anything that they can get their hands on. Nothing is off the table, and there's no limited timeline. That's who we're up against, and that needs to be clearly stated. Now, who should fight this? I think the last group are Christians, whether it's from Western Europe or the United States. Because fundamentally what this is a religious civil war. Let's be clear about that. That's what this is. And both sides have used violence to terrorize the other side. There are no clean hands here. There's blood on both sides. Ask anyone that's come from Iraq, whether they be Shia or Sunni. They can tell you of people in their own families that have been killed, you know, kidnapped, tortured, and killed. And people are out for revenge. They have long memories. It's a religious war, and it's also a tribal war. That's what this is. And I'm emphasizing this for a point. The president doesn't want to describe the situation. We're not dealing with it, people of the Islamic faith. This is a death cult. Well, there's one problem with that. Yeah, they're killing people. You can go to YouTube and watch the videos. I've seen a few of them. It'll turn your stomach. But it's educational in this sense. It shows you what you're up against. But don't you think when the United States or anyone else fires missiles or drops bombs on what suspected targets of the Islamic State, the people that get hit with the bombs end up dead? Is the United States a death cult? I say it's not. But this is a standard trick, is to demonize your enemy. And it's not hard when it comes to the Islamic State. Its propaganda is being used by both sides. The mess in Iraq and Syria needs to be handled by the people over there in the Middle East, not the United States. Now, the president has laid out what I think is a very foolish strategy. He wants to limit this to 3 years, and that is a mistake. You're letting your own enemy know that in 3 years we're out of here, and it's really politicizing this because he's handling this mess to the next president, whether it be a Democrat or a Republican. There should be no limits as to how long we're going to fight this if we should be fighting it. I say we should not. The case has not been made for another massive intervention into Iraq and Syria. So far, the Islamic State has killed 4 Americans. 4. Do I need to remind you that 2 years ago, 2012 were the last statistics, we had over 12,000 homicides across the United States, and upwards of 50,000 people died in auto accidents. You want to take the United States to war over this? If you do, then declare war. None of this authorization nonsense. Make the case for war. He doesn't want to do that. And that is what the Constitution says you should do. Request a declaration of war, and then it's up to the Congress to either pass it or not. You see, the president knows this. So do the people in Congress. The American people do not want any part of another war in Iraq. As much as they would like to see the Islamic State destroyed, they don't want to waste any more American lives, money, equipment in the Middle East, and specifically in Iraq and Syria. Because to do this right requires a massive intervention, not several thousand special forces and CIA agents, as well as drones dropping missiles or F-16s or F-15s or B-1s or B-2s dropping bombs. That's repeating the mistakes of the Bush administration. Think you can do this war on the cheap and quick. The problem is once you get engaged, it escalates. You get mission creep. And before you know it, you need tens of thousands of combat troops there. If you really want to do the job, we are talking several hundred thousand troops and a lot of money. And that's what the American people are saying, enough is enough. We're not going to put up with this again. So the president has sent a letter, and you can read it, and I forgot to say this, I should have said this a lot earlier. The way you listen to the Pronk Pop Show is to go to pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops, pronkpops.wordpress.com. And if you do that, you will find links at the very top to my most recent 60 to 80 shows. At the bottom, you'll have links to my entire portfolio of shows. But what's important here is that I have additional information, articles, videos pertaining to the news stories I'm covering. Now, I don't favor what the president's doing, and I hope the Republicans, as well as the Democrats, reject it. I'm all in favor for the president exercising some his leadership skills, which have been in rather short supply, and encourage the nations of Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Turkey, Egypt, Bahrain and others to form an alliance and crush the Islamic State. And if they're not willing to do that, I would wash my hands of it. And the same goes with the Iraqi regime. Remember, the reason why the Islamic State today controls cities and towns and a lot of territory is the Iraqi army cut and run. They took off their uniforms, abandoned their equipment. And who got all this equipment and ammunition and supplies? The Islamic State. This was the army that supposedly the United States was training and supplying. No one thought that all that equipment was going to go to the Islamic State, the very people that we were fighting in the surge. So it's about time that the people in the Middle East, both the Shia and the Sunnis, put an end to this bloodshed. It's their mess. And the United States should stay out of their mess. As much as I'd like to see the Islamic State destroyed, remember, it's our intervention in that Iraq that led to the deaths of thousands of U.S. soldiers and the spending of over $2 trillion. We're supposed to learn from mistakes, not be emotional. And that's the problem with most of these callers and many of these talk show hosts. It's very easy to get in front of a microphone and say, let's go over there and bomb them, let the rubble bounce. And what would that accomplish? What would that accomplish? Because what is the Islamic State doing? They're fighting an insurgency war. They're going to be hidden amongst the people that really are neutral, don't want to be on the Islamic State side or anyone's side. That's what Hamas is doing in Palestine, attacking the Israelis. They put these sites where they're shooting the missiles in apartment complexes. You see, the Islamic State knows that they would lose a conventional war. They know that that's what the United States wants to fight. They're not going to fight a conventional war. They're going to go into hiding amongst the people of Iraq and Syria. That's why I say you can bomb them for the next 50, 60 years. It's not going to win anything. It's going to take combat troops to go building to building, room, floor to floor, room to room, and root out the fighters. And that will take hundreds of thousands of troops. I don't want them to be American troops. The Turks, the Saudis, Bahrain, Jordan, Egypt, they have large armed forces. Let them spill their own people's blood. Because this is fundamentally a religious war, and it's the Sunnis that are the problem. They are the Islamic State. You see, the problem is all those countries are also dominated by Sunnis. In their heart of hearts, many of them don't want the Islamic State to be destroyed. So the big mistake would be to send tens, hundreds of thousands of U.S. troops in. The problem is special forces can't accomplish it. Yeah, they can take out the leadership and they can take out targets with the help of the CIA. But can they win the war? No. Can they win the peace? No. And why do I say that? We know to win an insurgency war usually takes decades. Decades, folks. And a commitment to a long, costly war. And the American people don't want that. Politically, this is a non-starter. Stay out. Stay out. Now, if the president wants to show leadership and get an alliance formed and lay out a strategy and provide minimum assistance to those countries, okay. But it's up to the people that are surrounding this area, surrounding Syria and Iraq, and that is Turkey, that is Saudi Arabia, that is Jordan. Look at the map. And that is Iran, and they're no friend of ours either. Stay out of religious sectarian civil wars. That should be the lesson. When are we going to learn it? When are we going to learn the lesson? The military doesn't want to fight this war. They want to fight a conventional war, even though the enemy will not fight a conventional war. Because if they did, they would lose, and they know that. This is a guerrilla or insurgency war where the objective of the insurgents is to overthrow the existing regimes, whether it's in Syria or Iraq. They're not going to play by our rules. They are going to be brutal. They are not going to be taking prisoners. They're going to be killing prisoners. And they've shown they have a thirst and appetite for it. And you see it in the videos, which are propaganda to really provoke the American people and the American government to come on back. That's ultimately what they're trying to do. They want the United States to re-engage. They want the United States to intervene with tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands. Why? So we can kill them. That's what they're about. And we have people falling for it. Falling for it. You know, and I know, with a few nuclear bombs, we could literally destroy the Islamic State. but then we would be losing our credibility and the moral high ground for the simple reason we would also be killing hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of innocent people. That's the nub. What are we talking about here? Somewhere on the low side of 10,000 to 50,000 jihadists, warriors, soldiers that are loyal to the black flag of the Islamic State. That's who needs to be destroyed. But they're not going to engage us in a conventional war. It'll be a guerrilla war. Unlike Vietnam, where you had jungles, this would be in the deserts and fighting for small towns and cities. And we would have continuous terrorist attacks, including suicide bombers. That's how fanatical they are, because it's a religious war. You don't see many atheist suicide bombers. You don't see many Christian suicide bombers. You don't see many Jewish suicide bombers. You don't see many Hindu suicide bombers. You don't see many Buddhist suicide bombers. But where do you see suicide bombers? In the Middle East, and they're Islamic suicide bombers of both the Sunni and the Shia sect. That is what we're up against. Don't fall for the warmongers banging the drums, whether they're Democrats or Republicans. We need a thoughtful, clear, concise strategy, and the U.S. role should be minimum, not maximum. And the people that should fight the war are the people that have the most interest in it, and that are the neighbors of Syria and Iraq. With that, I need to close the show with America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College.